Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
The air. They've created an artificial atmosphere based on the exact ratio of gases we need to breathe. 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, 0.93% argon, 0.04% carbon dioxide. They will recognize that as us.
DMA plus us equals terror.
I will code and send it.
We are receiving a new message already.
They have sent us a greater than symbol and a sadness hydrocarbon.
Great sadness.
Oh, that means they understand.
And it means they have empathy.
And if they have empathy for us, diplomacy can work.
Last week, we did two podcast episodes for you. This week, we're doing the same thing because we've got two episodes of Star Trek on.
Next week, we're going to do three episodes.
Next week, it'll be another two. But
this is really running me dry.
Yes, it is. It's running us all ragged, producing so much podcast content. But what are you going to do? This is the obligation we have to the podcast feed. But we got a little bit crazy last week. We got a little hectic.
Did we get crazy last week?
We got a little tense because we're trying to squeeze so much information. We're doing like slightly shorter.
When he says we, episodes. He means myself, Dan.
No, I mean me as well.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was stressful business. We can calmly proceed to discuss.
I think I was so relaxed I fell asleep during one of these podcasts.
I think you did as well.
Yeah, it might have happened. Cramming all this content in here is like gets me amped up as enough as it is. So instead of my usual giant Monster energy drink, I'm drinking a Diet Mountain Dew.
Good. Excellent.
We'll see how that treats me.
Excellent. And so this, as the title of this episode will have indicated, but if you're one of those adventurous people, one of those crazy folks who just dives right into their podcast feed and just pushes play, it's like, we don't know what the next episode is going to be. To clarify, this week on this episode, on episode 120, we will be discussing Star Trek Discovery Season 4, Episode 12.
Season 4.
Species 10.
C.
You notice that 10 is spelled out?
Yes. In the next episode, we'll talk about Picard Season 2, Episode 2. That's the next episode. That's episode 121. All right. I think we've got that all sorted out.
We got it all mapped out.
Right now, we're talking about Discovery.
So 10C is spelled out, but when they're talking about that scene later we'll get to with the percentages of the different hydrocarbons, they say like 25, 22, 17, 14, 12. Those are all numbers. But then when they say, and 10% fear, that's spelled out on the closed captioning.
Oh.
They spell out 10.
Right on. You see, I didn't watch it.
Isn't there some rule that you're supposed to like spell out the numbers 1 through 9 or something? I thought 10
copy editing rules vary from organization to organization.
Right.
Many of them do follow the rule that anything under 10 you spell out, anything 10 and over you use the number.
That's what I thought too, which is why I thought it was odd they chose to spell out 10. And when the closed captioning picked numbers for everything else, it spelled out 10 when I would have thought that, yeah.
And like also the official episode title is 10C spelled out 10.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there was some vigorous, potentially vicious argument in the writer's room or with the producers where they have a whole sort of a focus group of people gathered together fighting over what made more sense, the numeral 10 or written out 10.
Thank God it wasn't like Roman fucking numeral.
Well,
fuck that shit.
The other option is they actually all were on a unified front and they're trying to sort of do some subconscious
Brainwashing.
What's
to what end?
Conspiracy.
To what end, Dan?
That's always the question. But when you ask about conspiracies,
I guess it is always the question.
When you ask about conspiracies, the what end is always money somehow.
I'll mark it down on the record. I did not ask about conspiracies, but proceed.
You said to what? No, but what I'm saying is, you said to what end? And no, what I'm trying to say
using
is,
the
I was
and
suggesting
the general you. You're talking about the general you.
No, no you, like you specifically said. Patrick specifically said to what end? That's what you, Patrick, said.
To what end? Yes, I said that somewhat rhetorically.
Well, anyways, but the point I'm making, you asked me, so I'm explaining.
Okay.
I was giving a list of I was like doing some conspiracy shit where he was like, oh no, they're working to take over our brains, right? Yeah. And then you said, to what end would they do that? And I was like, well, in a lot of conspiracies, there is no to what end other than, oh, money and power, but they don't always explain how they get from A to B.
But money, like, and power still counts as an end.
Yeah, but flat earthing, like, how does that lead to money and power?
Get to flat earthing?
That's a conspiracy, and I'm saying, why does it exist?
I think maybe you sell books.
I don't think flat earthing is a conspiracy. I think it's just, dumb.
But yes, it's dumb, but if you ask someone why it is a conspiracy, because they believe we've been being lied to, basically, that there's a giant network of lying pilots that all got together and decided to lie to us about the Earth.
I like the idea of the lying pilots.
The lying pilots.
Some sort of sinister club.
But,
we're part of the lying pilots.
Anyways, just that... The question that comes to mind, obviously...
Not only is the Earth flat, it's a square.
The flat Earth, the question is, to what end would they lie to us about the Earth being round? And I guess money and power is the answer, but how do you jump from A to B?
You have made an astute point. Mm. A very astute point. Mm. Which is common practice for you. I'm not implying that that's something unusual to celebrate.
I like you know me well enough to be defensive about your compliments. Because I might take me like, well, you mean I'm not like this in other ways? What do you mean by that?
You mean I'm not spitting out a series of cogent comments?
Yeah, okay.
At all times during the day? All right.
Fair enough.
Okay, well, all right. Well, we veered off track a little bit there, but it was somehow tangentially related to Star Trek. Odd way to spell the title, but no worries.
It's
just kind of interesting. I don't know. It's kind of interesting. Interesting. Okay.
So this hypersphere, is it like, it's like a Dyson sphere, but hyper?
Yes.
It's like a Dyson sphere with programmable matter or something.
It is. It's pretty tight.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know what that makes it hyper other than it looks all crazy.
Similar to last week, my opinion of this episode was similar to last week in that I really enjoyed the episode overall. I enjoyed the sci-fi elements of it, especially learning all that cool new stuff about how the 10 C's language works and all that.
Yeah, that was fun.
I find this, like, the other plot with the book and Tarka and stuff just getting increasingly more, I don't know, just... ridiculous or something. I'm just not sure what to make of it. I don't buy it somehow.
And every episode at some point, maybe I'm making this up, but it feels like every episode Book is saying something to Tarka to the effect of like, so this will work, right? You're sure this is gonna stop the DMA, right? What we're doing is gonna work, right?
It's like Book is getting dumber.
Like he keeps
you know,
yeah, he keeps
that's
asking.
A good way to put it, Jesse. I was trying to put my finger on it. I was like, what's aggravating me a little bit about this plot? And we're no stranger with Star Trek having sort of ridiculous plot machinations in order to make some point. And that's fine. I normally wouldn't mind so much, but this has aggravated me somewhat as the season has gone along, where I'm just like, I'm not clear why Book would take this position. Even Tarka, his motivation is, we just don't know enough about it. And even when we learn more about it, it somehow doesn't square. Some people mentioned on the old internet, they made the comparison to Soren from Star Trek Generations, where he wants to get back to the Nexus, and he's sort of narcissistic and addicted to the Nexus, so he doesn't mind.
Except he's addicted to Oros.
Or what? Yeah, he's addicted. In this case, Tarka is, but Soren in Generations doesn't mind killing a planet full of people to get his way. Tarka is risking significantly more than that for a less clear goal, because at least Soren had gone in the Nexus. And he knew what it was like.
And it was like basically like being on heroin all the time with no bad effects or something. I don't know. Just being
essentially,
awesome.
Yeah,
this getting to another universe thing seems pretty theoretical.
But this whole, because he loves Oros, like, is that the only... You know, plus this land is supposed to be a cool land, but it doesn't. Yeah, it's not real clear on what's drawing him so much.
It's not grabbing me so much. And again, it's not something terrible or anything. I still quite enjoy the episode. I just find myself, it's getting harder and harder for me to buy into the storyline there, especially with the whole hiding the ship on the other ship from Zora. Okay. I mean, to me, it's, again, it's a little bit of a silly stretch. I really find it harder to take it seriously that Jet Reno was kidnapped and nobody figured out that she wasn't there. And it was all Zora didn't know. And I know it's the programming and the hacking and stuff, but it's like multiple levels of that solving all the problems in order to force this storyline.
Maybe it's a joke on the fact that like she's not in every episode.
Yeah. Right.
See, that would be a good
joke.
She's
always kind of popping in and out. Like,
yeah. Everyone's just like, yeah, I haven't seen her all day. Come to think of it, you know, and it seems kind of weird. Like,
where have you been?
The whole, how Book wanted to deal with the DMA. Maybe I just missed this, but all along I was under the impression that he wanted to destroy the DMA.
Seems like he had a violent intent.
Well, yeah, and so suddenly he wants to shut down the DMA, but then he finds out that Tarka was going to destroy the 10C, and Book is not okay with that. Yeah. And that makes, and I guess that makes sense, his intention. But I mean, what
he doesn't want to do to them,
right?
What
right.
you know?
But what did? But what did? Yeah, right. But what did he think was going to happen by just shutting down the DMA?
He wouldn't have known that it could potentially cause the destruction of the whole alien race, essentially a genocide.
Yeah, but what I mean is that
that's the fact he discovered this episode. No,
but what I mean though is like all this time he's wanted to shut down the DMA. How would he think that it would have been a permanent solution?
Especially, I agree with you, especially because since it already happened once where they shut it down and then it came back.
Yeah, and so, right, and so the 10C can obviously just keep building more DMAs. They think they're going to take their power source and that'll prevent them from doing
it.
So it seems weird that he's suddenly super surprised that Tarka doesn't care about killing, like, all those...
He should have given up, like, several episodes ago.
And
taste the fucking music.
Yeah, and analyzing your analysis...
analyze, watching the Watchers.
Their plan is to take the power source, and then that means no more DMA. Except, why couldn't they just make a new power source?
Yeah,
right. Well, it's
no more DMA.
And it was weird that they had the power source just open for the plucking. Basically, you have this species that has their weird.
They're super protective.
They have this weird abyss slurpee monster that sucks you in. from that movie, The Abyss, which. Was the effects they used in Terminator 2.
James Cameron.
Those effects.
Directed that.
It was all that kind of goopy thing. goopy water thing. So it brings these creatures inside and protects, puts them in this orb as supposed to be the protection, right? So they're protecting these people, they're captors. They're protecting them from destroying their shit, I guess. But all it takes is a nice good phaser plasma blast to blow a hole in this
plasma blast.
In this orb, right? to get out. Right. And they decide to just, and that's like, okay, fine. Well, they couldn't protect against that for some reason, but whatever. But then they have this power source that's just sitting right out there in the open. Like, if they're bringing people in, wouldn't they want to be super protective of, like, put it over, like, 20 layers of that orb? But apparently it was just, they could just grab it, you know? Well, was it just floating around somewhere and they could just transport it in? Like, it wasn't under any kind of protection, which I found. And if, oh, by the way, if you take it while it's on, the whole place might blow up. Like, I don't think they would have overlooked such a possibility.
We will have to see how this is resolved. It could be that the next episode, the season finale, will tie up some loose ends that will retroactively make a couple things at least more palatable or make a little bit more sense. I don't know. For me, the issue is that it's like this extra drama that's not necessary, because I'm frankly finding the whole other plot, the A plot of trying to communicate with this people. I find that much more tense and interesting and much more old school Star Trek in a way where it's like it's serious. There's lives on the line. But the stress is coming from, will they find a solution in time? Will they be able to use their brains to come up with some sort of solution?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. The A plot is definitely works on its own, but I guess they just put the B plot in there to either A, try to put coal in the fire or whatever, to try to sort of push the plot along, provide drama.
Put coal in the fire. shovel coal right into that fire in a locomotive.
Right.
In this analogy, the plot is the locomotive.
You're wasting time right now.
Or the plot is the train. I mean, is the train cars.
Or this
the
is
locomotive
all,
are the right is the writers or, collectively.
Or this is all a
set. So you shovel coal into. The-
or this is all a setup to write Book out of the show. I don't know. But it seems like Tark is definitely going to die, probably.
So who knows what's going to happen, but yeah, I agree.
Again, what is Oros? I imagine something like he'll see Oros and Oros will talk him down, and then Tark will feel really guilty, and then like, and then Oros will talk him down, and then he'll feel really bad, and then they'll let him die or something.
That's not how this,
how can Oros just disappear like that from the rest? Because that's a loose end right there for sure.
I'm sure we'll get a resolution to Oros, what happened to him, what his situation is. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a situation in which Oros finds out what Tarka attempted to do or something and decides that he's like a terrible person or something. It's probably not the way they're going to go. Of course, they could go a number of different ways.
I remember reading some posts on Reddit. Someone suggested that maybe Oros is like the one who created the DMA and all that stuff. And it didn't seem likely, but it would be interesting if this was some kind of commentary on sort of like technology and how it works today, because like Oros is the only person controlling this giant automated system that's the hypersphere, be like, you know, and it's pretty cool and all, but there's certain things that you can't do right because you can't look at all the specifics, so you have to do it all procedurally, which is not going to be as exacting. I mean, that would be some kind of like Minecraft. I was thinking more like Google, you know, or something like that,
or Minecraft,
like Google, like YouTube, yeah. YouTube, DMA,
Google or Minecraft,
DMA. Wait, DMC. What is it called? Takedown.
DCMA. DCMA. DMCA.
DMA. DMA. Takedowns.
DMA.
It was a DMA takedown. MDMA.
Yeah.
Okay.
The book thing also. This episode, we learn a couple things about Book that are interesting. Like he refers to his mentor, who is also named Cleveland Booker, and reveals that the whole Cleveland Booker thing is equivalent to the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Exactly, Dread Pirate Roberts.
In The Princess Bride, where it's a title that's passed down every few years or so. That was cool to learn. And then he talks about...
Cleveland Booker was actually from Cleveland.
probably, yeah.
That's why he was named that.
But Book talks about how he gives this whole thing about in the courier, there's like the courier code and you have to trust each other. And if you make a deal, you won't be like ripping people up. You know, all this stuff is like, okay, great. But that really seems like a really late justification for trying to explain why he's so loyal to Tarka.
Right.
And not only so loyal to Tarka, but loyal to him in contradiction to all these other people he cares about, and not just Michael, all sorts of other people that he cares about. He's going against them. And I guess the original motivation is revenge / feeling that he's done something by preventing it from hurting anybody else. Okay.
Which he didn't ever think he would actually end up hurting any. It never occurred to him that he might end up hurting other people while he's doing it or something.
Yeah, or that maybe all these other people are making the better decision.
Yeah, right. That's a lot of gall on that guy just to be like, nope, I'm going to.
A lot of gall on that guy. And, a lot of ball.
And really also it's like General Ndoye, who's a character I like a lot. She's written more consistently in that you can buy her position a little bit more. But I still don't entirely buy it. Even when she says, "Oh, I'm happy to pass you information, but I don't want to actually do sabotage."
Right? It's
stuff.
Like, what do you think you were doing?
And they're all like, "Well, come on, do it." And she's like, "Okay,
yeah." Right.
And then part of what didn't work for me there is that Ndoye is seeing that they are actually making pretty rapid progress, right? And she can't see everything. She doesn't see what's going on in the ship, etc. I it's plausible that she can continue the path that she started, but I don't know. It's difficult to say, oh, I want to save Earth. And to be fair, I'm thinking more in Starfleet terms and not in Earth terms. And they seem to be all aggressive and weird.
And Doria, yeah, it seems lame. Like a strange line to draw, though, between she said, "Oh, well, before I was just feeding you information. Now I'm, you know, committing treason," or I don't know what the term was. But and it seems like a weird line to draw because she was basically giving them the information that allowed them to fuck the Discovery over. So, I mean, unless she's just in denial, it seems kind of like why did you draw the line there? But yeah, like you said, it didn't take much to sort of talk her down from that position. When Book was talking about how he was inherited the name Cleveland Booker, It seems like Jet Reno, it almost seems like they wrote the part specifically for Tig Notaro or something, because the way she has the lines, like, you share a name with someone, that's not confusing at all. That's totally like, yeah. If you've seen any of your other stuff, it's just,
right in line with that.
Yeah. So it's pretty awesome.
Maybe she improv stuff. Maybe she massaged her lines a little bit. She's what saves this. Her addition to this plot line is what saves the plot line.
So she reminded me, she took a generic line and made it worked for her when Tarka, you know, was saying, you were my other great friend or whatever. And she's like, you have a funny way of showing it. If anyone else had said that line, it would have sounded kind of generic to me. Like one of those throwaway lines, like, give me one good reason I shouldn't, you know, or like you said, like, I'm listening, you know,
we're not so different.
Those stock lines they have, but it works with her because because she has this kind of like, is it sardonic?
Laconic.
Sardonic.
Laconic.
I think it's sardonic.
I think it's laconic.
I think I'm thinking sardonic.
Look it up.
You can look it up too.
How about this? I'll look up sardonic and you look up laconic.
And Jesse, what are we, who's going to win? What do we win?
Sardonic.
I think I meant sardonic.
Grimly mocking or cynical.
Yes.
Sardonic. Read laconic.
Don't tell me what to do. using very few words, which the definition uses very few words.
Yeah.
So I think it's more sardonic. She's a sardonic wit. Because she's
honestly,
like,
I think we have a safe compromise here that she is being simultaneously sardonic and laconic. Because she is a person of few words.
Yeah, and she said, you have a funny way of showing it, which sounds like a throwaway, like generic line, but the way she says it, it's like, it's right in line with the kind of jokes she makes.
Tig Notaro is fantastic, baseline fantastic, and then Jet Reno is magical. It's a magical character.
She has a good show there's two seasons of it, which is, I wish there were more. It's called One Mississippi that you can see on.
Oh, really?
Oh, I heard good things about it.
You can see on a Hulu, and I think it's Amazon Prime and Hulu. I think you can see it on right now, but that's worth watching. It's good.
I just love seeing her in this situation being so, I mean, she's stressed, but she's so calm and quiet and sort of methodical. She has that engineering type attitude, and I think that's wonderful when they do that, when somebody's position, you know, in this case an engineer, displays personality traits that make sense within the context of somebody who would think about, like, I'm going to solve this problem and I'm going to look at all these angles and here's what I can do and improvise and this, all this other stuff.
She could tell by looking at Tarka's like hollow video game that he was playing that there was no good happening. Then it looked like some kind of weird puzzle.
Even Tarka's face was like, what's going on? All right, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back,
take a quick break.
We can discuss the 10 C's magical language.
The 10 C's of magical language?
No, you know what I said. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back.
Yeah. So you
give your point. If I hope you don't mind if I'm going to have a small celebratory Kinder Bueno mini. What? As a reward for a good first break.
that's
is that all right?
We're not receiving money from them yet.
Sounds good.
Here's me opening it.
Here's me opening it. Like, here's me doing this. It's always. I kind of want one of those later.
I got a whole bag of them. Huh?
Whoa, oh, those things creamy. Are good. Mm. They should sponsor us because we love them. Mm-hmm. So for the hydrocarbons, I was able to get all 16 colors of the hydrocarbons, but they didn't show all 16 equivalent emotions for the hydrocarbons. I got like 9 of them. But
did they list them? They listed them all out, didn't they?
I don't think they ever did.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
So they were talking about how they had the carbons and they were showing all the different colored ones and they mentioned a few. And then few of those.
Was one of them sardonic?
No, but maybe that is one of the missing ones.
Wasn't it an extra stinky one?
It was
an extra stinky little smell odor. Pheromone, whatever.
It's just a stinky. Oh yeah, I'm feeling just, stinky. Is that that's an emotion? Is stinky?
No, I was saying sardonic. Like if you smelled sardonic, it would be stinky.
Oh yeah, like that skunk or He-Man figure. And then the next time we felt it, when you felt it. When Hugh was talking about how he wanted to go, he was like delving back into his addiction. How he wanted to go back into the because Hugh is addicted to peace or whatever. He was talking about...
I'm addicted to peace.
He was talking about...
addicted to peace, man. Hey, man, don't get on me, man. I'm just addicted to peace, man. I don't think we should fight anybody at all. Stop, just mellow out, man.
So he was talking about how he felt peace, calm, and comfort. Now, you could say those are three different emotions, but I'm going to choose to say that that's one emotion.
It's like a soup. It's a melange, you know? You mix things together in different ratios.
So then later on they show all the hydromolecules and they show the percentages of the different ones. Yeah. And so using that list, I compiled the list of terror, love, sadness, curiosity, peacefulness, joy, irritation, surprise, fear. So that's 9. And that's all I had, because the other two that Colbert mentioned was calm and comfort, which you could bump that up to 11, but I think that's the same as peacefulness, yeah. So it's only 9. But they did mention all the colors. We have a purple one, a red, blue, dull white, blue.
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 I'm going to start over. Oh, no. This is a game we're about
I'm
to play.
I'm feeling that color irritation. Mixed with a little bit of terror.
Terror. Oh, man. What?
No, go ahead and start your...
You're afraid that you're not going to let me get through it. That's why I'm scared.
Totally let you get through it, unless it's funnier to not.
Okay, I was wondering where the terror
was.
That's
the algorithm.
It's when you said that I was feeling terror, that made me feel terror, because I didn't know what I was scared of. So there's purple, red, blue, dull white, an off-white, maybe an eggshell.
You've separated out the dull white and the off-white.
There was a dull white, because there were three kinds of white. So I'm thinking the off-white was maybe an eggshell.
Maybe.
So it's purple, red, blue, dull white.
Purple. Plosives.
They call me Mr. Pink, they call me Mr. Purple. Mr. Blue. Mr. Purple.
Mr. Blues guys.
Purple, red, blue, dull white, off-white, white. There's a deeper kind of purple. There's an orange.
Orange.
Deep purple.
There's a brown.
Brown.
There's a brighter kind of purple.
Brighter.
So there's like three types of purple? Could one of them be a lavender?
I don't know the names of the shades. Maybe you want to say...
I didn't pay attention
or
to
the... violet.
Violet
colors.
Or...
I just looked at colors. I saw, ooh, colors.
You saw, ooh,
like, ooh, colors. A bunch of colors.
Ooh, look at all the colors up in the...
Is magenta more purple or is magenta more red?
I don't know.
Magenta is magenta.
How does it compare to burgundy?
It's a burgundy.
Classic philosophical question.
Right. What is burgundy?
What about salmon? Okay, so we have purple, red.
Bordeaux.
Purple, red, blue, dull.
Blue.
Purple, red, blue, dull white, off-white, white, a deeper purple, an orange, a brown, a brighter purple.
A brighter purple.
A black that you could, I would say, is almost onyx. Maybe.
Onyx.
They had a black one?
They had a black-ish one.
Oh, that's interesting.
Actually...
Just from the UI, because it's because the backgrounds are so dark so often.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't notice it. But I guess it would make sense if you're in situ.
Actually, would you say onyx is a darker black than black? Is onyx like really black? What's the black that's kind
obsidian?
Of...
Obsidian?
Maybe it
But would... that's shiny. Jet. That's like a shiny
black. It was a shinier black.
Maybe Jet. It's obsidian.
Maybe it's not onyx.
Glass
maybe it's
black.
Obsidian. Then there's light green... And then there's a forest green.
Hmm.
There's a yellow.
Yellow.
A light blue, perhaps a cyan.
That's a lot of colors.
And the last one.
Jeez.
The last one.
Paisley.
I can think. Eat your paisley.
Chartreuse? No, is there a chartreuse?
Well, the closest I could compare it to is maybe a burnt sienna.
Burnt sienna.
But I don't know. So that was all 16
sort
colors.
Of like an adobe
a light
color?
Brown.
Adobe.
No, probably darker than
Adobo.
That. I don't know. Well, so, thank you for that tour of the colors of the emotional
your
sand.
Roy yeah. fucking G. Bibb.
That's what I thought the order was going to be at first for the hydrocarbons when they were trying to.
You were like, I know what it's going to be. I'm a genius.
No, it's the Z position was. It was the brightness of the light was mapped to the Z axis. That's how
the brightness
it.
Of the light.
The light.
The angle of the dangle.
Yes. Sucked up in a deuce and go
all of
rolled,
that
rolled up in a douchevo.
All of that.
I remember riding in a car called a douchevo in Europe one time.
Are you sure? Did like your dad or somebody just tell you that?
No, I was there. I've only been to Europe once. It was either
Yugoslavia.
It was like southern France, I think.
Aix-en-Provence.
I've been to
Marseille.
Because I remember it's not a Peugeot, but it's a douchevo.
Okay, I believe you. If you're listening in France, please write us in at feedback@discussstartrek.com and let us know about the old douchevo, if they're still around.
Is Dan lying?
Yo, I got only one addiction, and that's peace.
Yeah. All right. you've gotten me confused. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Alien languages. Alien languages.
Alien language.
I so thoroughly enjoyed this. I had already thought that the idea of the magic emotion dust was cool to begin with, but adding on this context of the light flashing and the multi-molecule different ratios stuff, and you decode it with the 3D dimensional positioning of the light based on brightness and all that. That's awesome. And even more awesome is they're deducing correctly that they were developing a connecting language, which is cool. And that sort of, they've got people reading books. Whoever's writing these stories,
they read them books.
Somebody's reading some books. They're reading some anthropology books. They're reading some linguistics books. They're getting some stuff pretty awesomely correct here. Another thing that really jumped out at me was Dr. Hirai making the comment about
that guy's gift. Tight.
Yeah, he is. He's really great. But the thing about gift giving. Oh, by the way, Dr. Hirai is back to snacking. Remember
yeah, how I when he was talking about, we don't even know if we could evade their attacks during warp. And he's like,
crunch, crunch.
Yeah,
he's just back
that's when I noticed.
Yeah, he only does, he stopped snacking when President Relax scolded him last episode. Yeah. But now he's back. He's comfy again.
Fuck her, man.
Jesse doesn't like the rules.
It's his way of being confrontational, is he eats in front of your face like that. It's like, they might kill us, plop.
I think he's just being relaxed. I think he's just a chill relaxed dude. Guy. He's a chill dude. But he makes a comment about gift giving being a complex thing. And that's an important thing that comes up like in anthropology is like, that's like gift giving is a complicated thing. And there's so much context around it and it can be misinterpreted in so many different ways. And there's like, whether you realize it or not, there's all these rules that go around how to give and how to receive gifts and what it means and all that other stuff.
Even down to simple stuff, like you can give someone a gift and that's meant to show respect. But if you give someone a certain kind of gift, it could mean like
a box full of dog shit.
Well, okay. Yeah. That message is pretty clear, but if you, give,
but what if you mean it in a nice way?
You can give people a gift.
What if you're like, last time I was at your house, I noticed you didn't have any dog shit lying around your house.
You can give somebody a gift and it can be taken as a sign of respect, or it can be taken as a sign of disrespect, as if like, what, I need your charity or something like that. Yeah, so, absolutely. But I mean, that's just simple stuff. I mean, I can only imagine how complicated it gets. Like if you give someone a pile of shit versus a bag of shit, that probably means something different.
Yeah, pile versus bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or individually wrapped. Individually, like a box full of individually wrapped turds.
Well, they're high quality. They just don't care about the environment.
What do they wrap them in?
Well, they could wrap them in a biodegradable
thing. I think they wrap them in D, from what I hear.
Oh, no. Come on. We're already talking about piles of dog shit. You're gonna descend down to this level? All right. D's what?
You know.
What's the punchline?
You know what it is.
What's the punchline?
You know what it is.
See, now he doesn't want to say it because I've called him out on it.
No, it's D's nuts.
Is it D's nuts, Dan?
Joe's balls. All right.
Now we've got that out of our system.
Provide very mature analysis here.
It was also fun.
The old It's Got Star Trek podcast.
The whole of them doing that puzzle thing, it was kind of like a tutorial on how to solve a video game puzzle, but in a good way.
Yeah.
It felt like I was watching someone like solve a video game
puzzle. Imagine Linkos, which is a real thing that was developed a while back. I think it was, I can't remember when, but I've read something about that. You know, the idea of mathematical language, and there's limitations, of course, but you can get pretty complex with it.
They were talking about, there was I don't know if this is, I thought it was a little bit of a stretch when they had the greater than symbol and then the sadness.
Because it could mean
greater than sadness.
Yeah, like we couldn't care less or something.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Because,
right. So I kind of interpreted it that way too. It's like, we couldn't give a fuck, man.
I mean, I was thinking like, they basically sent back the equivalent of a sad face emoji.
Yes.
And you don't know if they're saying like,
we don't know if they have faces.
We don't know if they're saying, oh, we're sad that that's happening, or if they're just like, that sucks, you're getting hurt, you know, tough shit, real sad stuff, too bad, you go fuck yourself, you know. Like, it's like, oh, that sucks, it's sad and everything, but that doesn't matter, you know.
There's,
we don't
bigger
know
things out there.
Like how many of us respond to the terrors in the world. It's like, yeah, this fucking sucks, but I need that oil.
Yeah,
this sad, is America.
Sad face emoji. They're going through emojis. Yeah. Speaking of the terror, So it was the DMA plus 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, 0.93 argon, 0.04 carbon dioxide equals the air, which is there. And then it's
terror. And another, I thought, really clever solution to the problem they were facing. That's what made this so gripping was that they were presented with very complex problems, and the solutions that the writers of the episode came up with are really good, right? They fit. And I know it's like you're writing the episode, you can make up whatever you want, but it's still really difficult to get those things to link together.
And to be viable, even though you know you're suspending some amount of disbelief just for it still to be something that you can be like, that, okay, sure, yeah, I'm on board with that.
And
you know?
in good old-fashioned Star Trek style, like, they're telling a cool story, and you're also learning a little bit along the way. You're learning about how language works a little bit, about how culture works a little bit.
We learned that 178 is the atomic number for isolinium.
Damn right.
But
isn't isolinium a made-up thing, though? Isn't that a Star Trek thing?
Yeah, there's actually...
And 178 is pretty fucking... Yeah.
I think there's only 100... Big. There's only, like, 118 known... atomic number things.
Well, they made up some too.
Yeah, and those upper numbers are pushing it.
But but there's 118 total.
They make new ones. They make new ones all the time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. 900
smashing together those atoms.
It was a nice little subtle reference to the idea of, like, you know, 900 years, they'll discover a bunch of new kind of fuckers out there.
They
didn't
get all sorts of things. They didn't make any kind of animal.
And they didn't throw it in your face or anything. They just kind of. I like when they put little bits on the side like that.
You don't even need a particle accelerator. Just
I can tell by your face.
Shove it in the warp core.
Face.
Get any kind of atom you want.
Oh God! It's so
you got
annoying.
Your isolinium.
What's my isolinium?
You got your flippity flammium.
78.
I don't
neutrons.
Think this. I think this is.
All right. Sorry. I just fell in love with myself a little bit there.
Yeah. I could tell by how you were cleaning your glasses and had this look on your face like he's somewhere else.
Well, as you stated earlier, we know each other quite well.
I like
there
when
are
they
advantages and disadvantages to
when
that.
They don't throw the joke in. Not that 178 is a joke, but saying they don't throw the reference in your face, you know, being like, "Huh, I didn't know there was 178 atomic numbers," and so I went to look it up and I found, "Oh, there's 118." Oh, so a little.
What percentage of the audience do you think first watch through paused right at that moment and said, "I'm gonna fucking look this shit up"?
I mean, I don't know, and that's what makes it so good, because a lot of people might not get the reference.
Or
and
some people
that's
be like,
what makes
"Oh,
it better.
That's way too many." I already when know
you,
that.
You, a lot of people probably you, that's way too many.
Yeah, when you trust your audience enough that they don't have to get the reference, and when you don't force them to get the reference every time, which is they do that with jokes and shows, and they do that all sorts of places, and usually often
Hollywood.
I mean,
they do that in Hollywood.
Discovery sometimes doesn't give the audience enough credit, but I thought that this episode
Toronto.
I thought this episode gave the audience a little bit more credit than usual.
It can be hit or miss with Discovery, but they've done a good job, I think, of treating the audience as a mature audience. Except
they're not immature.
Except in the case of it's sort of split down the middle.
Like my pants. Like my pants.
And I will reiterate.
There's a crack in my butt.
I will reiterate.
See how it fit? Do you see now? Do you see?
I will reiterate that this is a common thing in Star Trek, where you'll have one storyline that's brilliant and genius and groundbreaking, and then you'll have another storyline that's just dumb as a box of rocks. So I can't be too mad at this whole book Tarka business, because it's not that unusual to stuff we've seen before in Star Trek. It's just kind of like, because it lasts the whole season. It's
That's part of the issue, is it just keeps going on.
And so
that's the problem. It's getting a little bit like, it keeps dragging.
It's not that we're treated as dumb, it's that we're treated as stupid, which I know is a very limited distinction there, but it's not even stupid, but it's like, just go along with it. Just go along with Book's motivation, go along with Tarka's thing, go along with the alien abyss people, weirdly not defending this thing that apparently will destroy them.
Even though we
assume that they're very protective and that's why they built this whole thing. So anyway, I guess we're reiterating upon reiterations at this stage.
When Jet Reno turns that thing on with licorice because she says it dissolves and conducts electricity, is that why? Didn't I hear somewhere that
is that why black licorice is gross?
Well, it's definitely gross for sure. But
black licorice is delicious.
You don't like eggs, but you like black licorice.
Differing.
I'm not judging you. I'm just saying you have a different taste in food.
Two different things.
But I mean, it
kind of seemed
like
you were judging him because you stopped the thought you were expressing turned your head towards Jesse, stared him down, and then just,
I just think,
asked him that question.
He had an egg comment like ready to go. Like, you don't like eggs.
No, you don't like eggs.
I just think it's interesting.
Do you like licorice?
No, I just think it's interesting. Not, I think black licorice isn't particularly popular, and you like it. And then something that is popular, you don't like. And that's not, that makes you who you are, Jesse. That makes you the beautiful soul that you are.
But people like
punk rock.
People like what?
Black licorice.
Nobody. What? No, only like my mom and people from that place.
lots of people like black licorice.
No, nobody likes black licorice.
Lots of people. We used to sell tons of it at that German deli.
But you served weird old people or something.
There was all sorts of people came through that store.
I bet the only weird old people. The weird old ones.
I wouldn't say that it was clear that Jet Reno likes it. She had to use it for her trick. We see her eating like the red licorice in another episode.
When they're
like, you shouldn't be eating here, and she's like, this isn't food, this is candy.
So is that, I read somewhere, I thought I heard somewhere that if you eat too much black licorice, it's poisonous or something.
Yeah, probably.
Is that why it's poisonous? If this is true, is because it conducts.
If you eat too much of anything, it's poisonous.
I don't know, but you can say that about anything. I'm just saying to a certain degree.
I think it might be the liver. Maybe it fucks up your liver.
If eating black licorice is poisonous, I wonder if it's for the same reason that it dissolves and conducts electricity. I was trying to get at.
Yes, I caught wind of that. I didn't hear it from a spy. I gathered that. I deduced that from where you were going. And I fully support your theory.
I bet those young people that bought that black licorice were giving it to their old weird parents.
What, you mean the young people at the German deli I used to work at?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about some young people on the Discovery.
You like that mango?
Some ensign is like
weird.
Mango licorice is good.
Ensign's like, oh,
you rather that mango licorice?
There's no such thing as mango licorice.
Oh, there totally is, dude.
I would eat that.
Yeah,
that you sounds eat good. It. Mango's one of my favorite fruits.
World market.
Well, if you would eat it, you should eat it. Okay.
I eat a lot of bananas, too.
Let's take a break. Let's get some bananas, eggs,
God damn it, Jesse. He's trying to start shit when we're going to break.
Yeah.
What did he say? Fuck bananas?
He said fuck bananas. He just did that to
that
try,
was, that
try
was
to get
shit.
My goat.
Okay.
I like bananas.
We'll take a quick break. we're gonna hash this out, and when we finish that up, we'll come back and wrap up the show. All right. Be right back. Okay, we're back. And we haven't resolved the banana thing.
Jesse relented. He decided that bananas are fine.
The bananas are super awesome.
Hey, how did they find the hypersphere? I can't remember how they found out where it was in the first place, because it seems like they just appeared.
No, there, that was the whole thing when they got information about the people who live near the edge of the galaxy.
Yeah,
and
that's why they went to the edge of the galaxy.
Contacted those people or something.
Yeah,
and then
okay.
They did scans, and then they're like, okay, there's this crazy thing out
fair
there.
Enough. Yeah, that's fair. That's
with
fair
the zaps enough. And the boops and the scans.
And the scoobies and the boobies.
And the crazy old skizzy scans.
I
will say the production value, again, great. Music was really good, intense. There wasn't a lot. It was not like there's like a lot of space stuff going on, but all that business with the abyss stuff. On the one hand, when I first saw that, I was like, oh, this is the abyss. So
yeah, right.
You're kind of like, that's one of the first digital effects ever. And now we're it's like, yeah, you're kind of momentarily disappointed. But on the other hand, to me, it worked. It kind of, it was cool. And
it was cool. It was
the pod thing was cool.
It was really hard for me to get a grasp on the perspective. And that's not necessarily like a criticism, but it's,
well, it was really big, man.
Yeah, it was big and it was moving all fast.
It
like
was,
it was
like how many astronomical units?
It was, well, it was like one
several.
Point, it was 1.3 astronomical units.
That's
was
a lot.
Was the diameter.
Well, that's the diameter lot. Of the whole, yeah. of the whole fucking
that's
sphere.
That's big, man.
And then the ship is 1.5. A decently sized ship. Discovery.
I think the thing is when I mentioned this before, how there was an Enterprise episode when they went to an automated recharge station, and
that's
these
a very good one.
Yeah, it was good. The hooks were all moving the thing around. The thing that made it harder to picture the hooks is they were moving too quickly. Because usually things that big aren't going to look like they're moving as quick
unless
as
they're
they do.
Super radical robots.
Yeah. So
how fast do your hooks?
More than meets the eye.
So they were 200,000 kilometers away. That's a bitch shit. I mean, that. Granted, the dots were spray painting emotion goo on the surface. So, but they grabbed the Enterprise or the Discovery from far away. So presumably they moved at least 100,000 kilometers, and it went so in a matter of seconds. Like, that's fucking fast. Mm-hmm. That's fuck, man. That's fucking
fast,
man.
As fuck.
And they were warping. Oh, and speaking of the dots, okay, I'm not a dot hater. I'm a fan of the dots.
Are you talking about Spaceballs again?
No, not that. I am a dot hater in the context of Spaceballs, in the context of Star Trek Discovery and Short Treks, etc. totally pro dot.
Pro dot.
I like the dots, but they're silly. And they've always been silly.
Ever since they started screaming in the...
Okay, it's two things. First of all, dots have always been silly, but that's okay. There's plenty of silly shit on Star Trek. But their silliness is accentuated when it's in the context of this horrible, like, you know, genocide-causing thing. It's like this serious storyline. And it's all intellectually interesting and stimulating, the linguistics and all that. All this stuff is going on. And then you have the little dots with their cute little arms being all like, yeah, squirting little juices on the thing. Yeah. And so that's silly to begin with. And then, yes, this is at least the second time this season we've heard a dot be all like,
it's screaming.
It's like a screaming.
The robot screaming.
Yeah. And its little arms all flapping. And they're like, oh, we're trying to get away. Woo! And they look like the robot, like something out of the Jetsons or something.
Yeah, they do. It was weird watching.
Like the maid from the Jetsons.
It was weird watching when Adira was all. They were swiping up on the robots as if it was like some kind of, you know, touch screen action going on. They all the dots, they zoomed up except for the last one when
that was a neat scene. It was so cute how the two of them were just going down the line and
and
flicking on the robot.
You notice, working together. And you notice when Adira gets all the way to their right and they swipe up that last dot and then Adira moves back over to their left again, the dot. All the other
so
dots.
So far, so good.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying really. All the dots like moved up really quickly, but that last dot, if you notice, kind of like almost fell back down again. Kind of like, have you ever, if you have an Android phone, I don't know how it is in Apple, but have you ever tried to swipe down to get the settings menu and you only halfway swipe and only halfway goes down?
That's all jitters.
If you watch the dot, the last dot on our left, Adira's right, you'll see that dot kind of goes up a little bit and then floats there for a second and then the dot goes, zoo! It's like no reason. There's no reason for it.
I'll have to check that out.
But there's no reason for it, but it's not a criticism because it's like, well, that's an interesting detail they chose to put in there, but it's just kind of makes me curious. Like that was an interesting choice, but you know, it's a little thing, but it was fun. Yeah, it was fun. That scene was kind of fun.
I like the dots. I wouldn't change a thing. It's just,
yeah,
it's
right.
Kind of funny. It's sometimes
tonally it can be strange.
Tonally incongruous to see. It was like, hey, woo, boo, boo. Dots out there.
Here, boo boo,
and part of what I'm talking about is like then you know other parts of the episode we're seeing these grand majestic silhouettes from the we're looking from behind the crew who are staring in awe out of the shuttlecraft to a Lovecraftian behemoth, you know, in the shadows in the gaseous shadows, you know, the mega widescreen format, the cinematography is gorgeous,
scale.
And then it's like dots are like. It's just like all in the same episode.
So in the orb membrane, that super gas monster, it looked like some kind of giant dragon spirit or something. It was really awesome, but it's hard to tell what it's made of. But if we recall though, it does have bones because they were on the gas giant, but they're
presuming they're the same
bones.
People, which we believe now they are. Because last episode we said like, hey, it could
like
be a
cartilage
misdirect.
Bones.
Yeah, cartilage bones. But it was interesting because the way they were presented,
bones.
It made them seem like a big gas monster.
Like bones of a bird.
So maybe it was just, maybe they're like a, okay, so where do we end up on last week? Because I remember I brought up how the gas giants aren't supposed to have a core, but that gas giant had a core. All the gas was flown away, but then there was a hard,
and
there was
Jesse
a core.
Jesse and I suggested that perhaps a lot of gas. Giants do in fact have
cool. So okay, let's, if that's the case, then maybe these monsters are living there that are you know, living on that, maybe the
monsters is like
they're fucking monsters.
The monsters,
that's fair,
the super, okay,
fucking monsters.
Maybe they're gas giant monsters where they have a gaseous area surrounding them like we saw up front, but if you go deep inside of them past all their layers of gas and fart and stuff, they have you know, a bony cartilage core to them just like a gas giant.
I think it's just they're floating around in the gas in
you
that
think
type of atmosphere.
They're like balloony monsters.
They're like they got some scans or
jellyfish.
Whatever, and they're like there's a whole solar system in there and it's got some gas.
Well, I want to see if that's the case. I want
the previous one was a gas giant.
If that's the case, I want to fucking see.
Yeah.
pretty clearly dead
Maybe
on.
Maybe next episode we'll get to see little bit closer once they make the peace. Presumably they'll make peace and resolve things.
I'm hoping so, but like I said before, I want
it would be kind of funny if the next season episode was like, oh yeah, we genocided the alien race, Earth and Vulcan totally fucking destroyed because of a terrible rift in space.
I just wanted to get so super weird, but I know it's not going to get that weird, but it has... It's been pretty, it's been all right. The payoff's been all right, you know?
So. I think it can still, because it's been weird, I agree, and I think it can get even weirder still. We have this extra drama, floating around with Tarka, which is almost seems superfluous. Unless, of course, in the finale, they're going to make some point about how even people on the same side can be divided about what to do, and here's what happens if you don't compromise. So, I don't know, maybe that's the message they're trying to push. If so, I don't think it's been all that coherent. I'm much more interested in this whole idea of an extra galactic beast creature culture, living in some crazy electropod. And the technology they have and what that might mean for where Discovery could go from here.
Oh, yeah. Their technology, they are... We're level 2 on the Kardashev scale, which apparently is a real thing.
That is a real thing.
Those
a Dyson sphere, I think, is I think that's a level. No, level 1, I believe, is when you can harness all the energy of like on your planet, maybe, including the
sun. So what level are monkeys with rocks?
No.
they don't even rate.
Humans aren't a level 1.
We like a 0.2?
Something like that, yeah.
I want to know where we...
We just get oil and some solar
stuff. I want to know where we fall on the continuum.
I forget the specifics, but it's a range like that, and then a Dyson sphere is where you get like all the energy of your sun, and then another one level is like you can get all the energy of your galaxy. Seems like
those, total conversion.
Seems like those Dyson spheres would get pretty hot.
Maybe. I think level 3 or 4 is where you can harness all the energy of an entire galaxy. So it kind of steps up pretty intense.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Turns out to be not that much.
The average amount of energy in the universe is zero.
It's not that much.
Technically, the average amount of energy in the universe is zero.
So you can't do anything ever?
You can't really do anything.
Technically, we're just holograms inscribed on the inside of a two-dimensional sphere.
Those gas dragons? Technically. Those gas dragons, you know they can probably float around space like the space whales? You know those space whales we saw in TNG?
Gormaganders?
There are the Gormaganders. Well.
The Tin Man guy. The Tin Man fella.
So
from the Tin Man,
I don't remember that.
I think that's the one you're talking about. Okay. Oh no! Maybe it's a Galaxy's Child or something. Maybe it's
you're talking about TNG.
I'm getting stuff.
But
Tin Man and this other and the Galaxy's Child. There's all sorts of stuff that goes on.
So they can float around in the galaxy, but they just choose to live in the gas giant because it's all comfy and they always have like space pizza.
I think that's where
like
the
that.
Space pizza.
There's no such thing as space pizza.
They just evolved in a gas giant. You know. They're floating around. They're big creatures and they're
floating
around.
Yeah, and they
around.
Eat their. That's it's all
where
comfy
do you get
in
the
there.
Cheese?
Well, it's the space. It's space. You don't know what space pizza is made out of, but they're there.
It's not made
Good
out of.
Good lord!
It's not made out of a buffalo mozzarella because then it's not a real.
Not a real pizza.
Not a real Neapolitan pizza.
I didn't say
pizza.
Neapolitan pizza.
Has to be a buffalo mozzarella.
It's space Neapolitan pizza.
Buffalo mozzarella.
No, I'm saying because the gas giant's all
it's
comfy.
It's like cheeseless
pizza. It's like being on that gas giant is like being on the couch all snuggled up and like eating your space pizza.
I get what you're saying, but you've now created a situation where you've got to define to us what the basic space parameters pizza. Of any pizza are, space or otherwise.
It's an emotion.
it's an emotion.
Like the hydrocarbon, it represents a certain configuration of hydrocarbon.
Pizza's not an emotion.
How would you say space?
Does it have like a crust and a sauce
How would you say
and cheese and toppings?
It's expressed through like their hydrocarbon.
Crust, sauce, cheese.
Look, we don't know what life on other galaxies would be like.
Is it like a margarita? Margarita pizza? Not the drink.
We have something called life, and we don't know what that life would be like in another galaxy, right? So how do we know what pizza...
I think it's about the same.
How do we know what pizza's like in another galaxy?
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I have no response to that. I can generate no response
these
to
are
that.
These are the questions. The questions
what if,
for the ages.
What if? You've stumped me. You've stumped me. Old,
what is
my
pizza?
Old friend. My old friend. I've been stumped beyond belief. my old friend. My delicious old friend.
Okay.
Right. Delicious. Any other odds and ends? Anything else to toss out there?
Because
this is Star Trek Discovery penultimate episode.
So, the growling when they're growling at each other.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty great.
So you like that?
What then they're yelling at each other?
Mm. Did you like that?
So
It scared my cats, and then it scared the cat on TV.
Yeah, I thought it was so. I thought it was weird and uncomfortable, but then when they both laugh, it was kind of like, yeah, we know this is weird and uncomfortable, and then I laughed too. So that's kind of how I was because it was the side sort of profile shot of both of them yelling at each other. It looks so silly.
It was silly,
very silly, yeah. Weird and awkward. But I laughed for some reason.
I don't know what I make of that scene. I understand and appreciate the intention, and I think it was great. I'm not 100% convinced, at least in my subjective case, that it quite worked, but where it did work is Grudge running away.
Oh yeah,
to me that tied it up and made it work together. If Grudge hadn't run away, I would have just been left with, like,
I mean,
this is making me feel weird.
Yeah, I don't know if
then also simultaneously feeling guilty for feeling weird because I'm like, do I lack a heart or something?
No. See, because it was cheesy and out of place.
Saru and Burnham.
And if you hated it and you say fuck that scene, you can tell me, man. You can tell me, and I won't be.
I am internally conflicted.
And the whole time, like I said, every time I watch it, it's weird and uncomfortable. But then when they laugh after, like, the profile shot, it just gets so weird. And that they start laughing, something about it.
Sort of like when your mom wants to rent a movie and then it turns out to be a movie with some sort of intense lovemaking scene. And then you're like watching that with your mother.
And then
what do they think about?
Wait a second. What's the payoff at the end of that scene with you and your mother watching lovemaking scene? Because I'm saying that there was a
payoff. I talked about nothing payoff. Saying it's an analogy. It's similar. I'm saying it might evoke a similar feeling.
No, but you brought the analogy to what I was saying.
Awkwardness.
What I was saying is there was a slight payoff in this situation when they started laughing. Thing.
Oh, okay,
made me chuckle a little bit, and I felt guilt. I felt
you're right. My analogy doesn't work because the only payoff would be that you get to enjoy a high quality film that was recently nominated for Oscars. Hence, why your mother wanted to rent the video and watch it together.
Oh man, you're thinking of a movie in particular.
I think I know what movie you're talking about.
No, I'm not talking about
a specific 9½
movie.
Weeks. Did you watch 9½ Weeks with your mom?
No.
Well, just like you feel guilty for not liking that scene, I feel guilty for laughing at the end of that scene because it is weird and uncomfortable.
You know the other people on the ship heard that shit because it was loud as
fuck. Man, did you hear that
Saru,
shit?
Saru is...
I mean, and they were probably just like in the cabin like next to the bridge anyway. Like,
not in the cabin in the woods.
What are you talking about?
Which is also a good movie.
Yeah, so no, Saru, yeah, Saru is a creepy yeller, man.
Yeah.
He's a monster.
I like the individual.
He's a monster. Not like that space dragon's a monster.
The individual components are fine. It's just, I don't know.
It was weird. Yeah, it was weird.
It was an odd and an end.
It was.
And that's why I fucking
said. Do you think that Harai was when Rilik said, you know, you're not coming, you have to stay here.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell if he was relieved or if he was disappointed.
He was disappointed.
See, that's interesting. I thought he was relieved.
See, and I thought, and then at the end they were talking when she.
You think he was relieved?
He seemed kind of scared.
Well, at the end when she said afterwards, she said, you need to stay behind because you'll resume diplomacy afterward. Yeah. And at that point, I couldn't tell if he was starting to feel like nerves.
Maybe I just wanted him to go along because he's so awesome.
I think he was. I got the impression that he was super into the whole mission. He was into being awed by these aliens and talking with them. He was like into all of that. But I don't know. I got the impression that like he was kind of like, oh, I hope I don't have to go on this freaking pod.
Well, actually, but Jesse, I can't decide which it was, but I've been leaning towards both sides. I don't know which. I really don't know which it was. Because like it seemed like he was all into this shit, you know, and so it seems like he'd want to do it. But at the same time,
he was leading the whole thing.
At the same time, he might not want to have to. He's like, he talks a big game, but maybe he doesn't want to deal with the actual reality of it. You know, they should have probably taken him. I understand that if your one diplomatic means falls apart, you go to the other. But really, like, you should have taken. Harai was the best candidate for that job, I think.
Didn't like it to me.
Do you think that? Remember when she gave him shit for being like tactless?
Yes.
So do you think she did that because she saw something in him? Like, because, you know, when you get mad at someone, it often means that you want them to do better because you think they're able to do better,
yeah, so
right?
You're disappointed in them.
You're disappointed. So you get pissed at them because you want them to do with their potential and you care about what they have to offer. It's bad when nobody gets mad at you. Because like
they're just like, fuck this guy.
We don't give a fuck what this person
does.
And there's nothing at stake with this person. I've written them off. So maybe she was getting on his case because she was like, you have the potential to lead the people or something. I mean, they introduced this character for more than just this episode. They could have done anything they've done so far without him, but they introduced him for a reason. It seems like that was stronger than.
And they hired an excellent actor.
Yeah, so maybe he'll be more of a regular.
It would be great to see. I hope we see more of him because I really enjoy him.
I've seen him somewhere.
He's been on tons
like
of
I've
other,
seen
we,
him.
We talked about it last on last week's episode. I read through some of his IMDb stuff. So he
must have been when I was asleep.
He's a character actor who's been working for a long time. So yeah, you will find him. It's worth checking.
He seems very familiar.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, or shall we?
That's it, man.
Wrap things up.
Rapidly wrap, wrap it up.
Did you notice that Culber said she's got to be on the ship somewhere? In reference to Jet Reno. Mm-hmm. Remember last episode, I was complaining how Burnham kept saying it's got to work, it must work, it has to happen, mm-hmm. all that shit. Well, this is proof that it doesn't have to be anything just because you wish real hard on it. You mm-hmm. know.
I agree.
So. She was like, we have to find a solution. And then now Colbert's like, she has to be on the ship. But
it's hubris.
She wasn't on the ship. She was somewhere else. I don't think it was meant to. I don't think they meant anything by it. I just think it was a weird that they keep relying on this one line of it has to be this way.
It's a breakdown in command.
23rd mm-hmm. century, 31st century. People still are making declarative statements in the hopes that they'll magically become true.
Oh, man.
It's just a humanity, a habit of humanity.
Who can we blame for this?
Ourselves.
Oh no. Okay.
It's just up to us. We control the future. Okay. So that was episode 120. If you're into watching Star Trek Picard as well, be sure to double check your feed for episode 121.
And they call it Picard.
Because we'll be doing that. It's also today when you're listening to this, or when you first had the opportunity to download it. If you're listening in the future, who cares?
Don't give away the magic, the behind the scenes magic in the future.
But in the meantime, if you do want to get in contact with us, or interact with us in any sort of way, that kind of old fashioned way that the audience can interact with the hosts of the program that they listen to so regularly and find so entertaining. All you have to do is load up the old email machine, if you like. You can email us at isgotstartrek.com. Of course, you can go to isgotstartrek.com.
You can print out the emails.
Which is a website, and you can organize by series. And, you know, if you just want to watch, you know.
Series, organized by series.
Yeah, if you just. Yeah,
Siri, or is it, or Feezies? Feezies? What's her name?
Feezies? What are you talking about?
Her name is Feezies.
What's the Apple woman?
Siri.
Siri.
Not series.
Siri. Siri, organized by series.
Is a planetoid in the asteroid belt. Yes. Anyway, website is good.
It's where the belters
live. There's stuff you can do with the website if you want to check it out. Twitter at It's Got Star Trek. Instagram at It's Got Star Trek. Facebook.
You're like
search
dancing.
For It's Got Star
He's
Trek.
Doing a weird dance.
YouTube. Type
He's
in
a
the
dancer,
old
baby.
It's Got Star Trek. You'll find us on YouTube.
YouTube.
Yes. Be sure, mind you. Be sure. This is one of those commands. Not so subconscious.
Imperative.
Commands.
It's an imperative.
Not so subtle commands. Rate and review at Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Spotify or whatever business.
Snarkle Barkle.
Podcast Addict. Whatever you listen to us
on. Subscribe to us on Snarkle Barkle.
Click the button and give us a little rating. Give us a little juicy rating.
Chocolatey chews.
Your boys deserve it.
Rate us on soundgiblets.flirt.
Sniggle snarbs.
All right, you do whatever the hell you want. We're not going to care.
What are you worried about?
What are you even worried about? All right,
just forget about it.
We got another podcast to do.
Listen
so
to the next one.
We'll sign off on this one, and we'll sign back on.
But if you already listened to the other one, don't listen to this one.
Oh, it'll be all totally out of order. Yeah, totally out of fucking order.
Listen to that one first.
No, don't listen to this one if you've already listened to the other one.
That's right.
This is way too late to be warning people.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We will talk to you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
Be a gentleman. Hand that to me like the lady that I am.